very busy. Many important matters require a king's attention.
I'm king now. King now.
I am
king.
I am
king.
I am
kiss it.
I am
kiss it again.
I am
turn.
Your fingers or your
king
doesn't
fingers
discuss
your
battle plans.
He's one,
but
your fingers or your tongue.
I am the king. I'm telling mother.
Welcome to the Joffria podcast. My name's Bubba, and with me, as always, is someone whose face doesn't turn blue. Catfish, Catfish, we just watched Game of Thrones Season 6, Episode 6, Blood of My Blood. How's your blood doing?
My blood is a-boiling.
That's double B.
Double B?
Boiling blood.
Oh, right. How did I miss that?
Yeah, that is a great question. So, Catfish, let's hear it. You're ranking out of 10. What are you going to give this?
I'm going to give it 7.5 TT. No S, not TTs, just TT.
It's not a double T?
It is a double T, but there's no S.
Okay, so
we usually say TTs.
Okay,
but
sure.
It's just TT.
All right, so you're giving this double T's.
Yeah. You see?
All right, so what do you mean by double T?
I mean Tommen Truth.
Oh,
and that's why I didn't use an S, because there's only one time he's ever said anything true.
What was
and that?
That
is tonight, is he said, Marjorie is better than anyone he knows.
Okay.
And
that's probably true.
While he is right about that.
Well, he knew Joffrey. He knew our grace King Joffrey.
He did, but he didn't know him the way you really know somebody.
Okay.
So even though Marjorie is, if you looked at a continuum of people, probably on the worst end of the people he knows, she definitely is the best.
All right.
If not one of the best.
So you've gone a long way. You've given it a 7.5, but I'm still not sure I know how you feel about the episode. So how do you feel about it?
Well, I feel that it was a good episode.
Okay.
I'm a little disappointed in a few things. The action person in me, you know, I think you were kind of giving me a hard time because I liked an episode that you thought had a lot of talking, and I thought there was a lot of talking in this. Also, despite the fact that you tried to disabuse me of the notion that there was going to be some excitement, you were trying to let me down easy, you were trying to be my friend.
Yeah.
I still held out hope that there was going to be a great conflict between Jamie.
Right.
However, even though it was brilliantly done and a great bit of manipulation and a nice surprise, I was still disappointed because I wanted more action.
You wanted more action. Well,
What about you? What about you, Bubba? What did you think? What was your rating for tonight's episode?
So you gave it 7.5. And
TT. Don't say the S.
Listeners, Catfish and I have not agreed on a single episode this year.
That is not only that, but we've been far apart.
Far apart.
Mm-hmm.
And so you tell me, what is my ranking for this episode?
I'm going to say you finally have come to your senses, and you're going to give it a 7.5.
I'm giving it a 7.5 double U's.
Double U's?
Yeah, that's when you're utensil unknowing, like Gilly. You don't know how to use utensils, so you're unknown about utensils. Utensils unknowing. 7.5, this was a typical middle episode. If you watch the series as a whole, all except the first season, episode 6 is, of course, where Viserys got his golden crown, and that had a real thrilling moments in it.
I like that.
I believe that often the season dips right between on episode 6 and 7. If you remember episode 6 last year, that was Sansa and Ramsay's wedding night, one we don't want to remember. I do feel a bit down on the episode, but I think it set up things that I am actually kind of looking forward to. So, benefit of the doubt, I'm going to split it right down the middle and agree with you. We finally agree, Catfish.
Oh, God. 7. We can end this podcast. Thank you very much and good night.
All right. So we are going to break down this episode like nobody breaks down this episode. Why? Because we have literally gone frame by frame through Bran's vision quest and made a note of every single thing he saw in the vision quest. It was great to see. Spoiler alert, we finally on the show saw the Mad King. Of course, he had died 17 years before the series began, so we had to see it in a Bran flashback. But that was thrilling. We're going to go through
any way you can see the Mad King is fabulous.
Yeah, it's good that he's, you know, getting some screen time, getting that IMDb list.
I want to say, even though there may be some criticism, as soon as I saw him, I knew he was the Mad King. So,
you know what?
You know what?
Yeah.
In your face, people who think I don't know things. I knew it was the Mad King.
We'll explain who he was later to Catfish. But, Before we break down this episode like nobody else has broken down an episode, I want to say real quickly, we have been talking all season long, all season six long,
right?
The double
oh
G.
Oh, my God.
The double G.
The double G.
The great giveaway we're going to have here on season six of Game of Thrones. And we have got wonderful, wonderful prizes. In fact, our good friend, the Double W.
The Double W?
The Wyndham Wizard sent us some prizes. Thanks to you, loyal listeners.
Oh, my God.
Sending him some tweets. So, Catfish, why don't you talk about these prizes from Wyndham Hotels, which we got because of our loyal listeners.
Well, I'll tell you, we got some great, great swag.
Yeah.
If you've ever been to a convention.
Yes.
It's,
I always go.
It's the kind of swag you'd get at a convention.
Right.
So, it's swag that you'll enjoy.
Now, there's a dramatic pause there. So, okay, here, the first thing looks pretty cool. Why don't you explain what the first prize will be?
Well, we got three different kinds of things, but we got about 17 or 18 of them. So we got like three different items, but multiples. And the first one we got is a Wyndham Wizard beard.
Whoa.
Which, for our Periscope viewers, looks like this.
Show us. Oh, wow. Look at that. That you look just like Tormund or the Wyndham Wizard, whoever you prefer, if you win one of these wonderful Wyndham Wizard beards we're going to be giving away. What's the second?
I will kill for you, Brienne. Yes, you like? We stayed Wyndham afterwards.
What accent did the Wyndham Wizard suddenly pick up?
You know, whatever. He's been around the world. It's kind of a polyglot. He's got a mix.
All right, so tell us about the second prize we got from Wyndham Hotels.
Well, it's too bad we can't give these two prizes to the same person because the next one is one of those something you put over your eyes to block out the light. Yes, it's a what?
Yeah, it's a sleeping mask, and you've said about five times already.
Right,
we're not 5 minutes into it.
You know what? If you're going to keep doing that, I'm going to give you a look like this.
That's right, a sleeping mask with Tormund Giant's Bane, a.k.a. the Wyndham Wizard's eyes on the sleeping mask. They are from – you really look like him on Periscope. Everybody would now see that if you get the sleeping mask and the beard, you're really going to look like Tormund Giantsbane, a.k.a. the Wyndham Wizard. This is incredible. And
I can sleep through cold, but I do not like light.
I didn't ever think Freud sounded like Tormund, but okay. And we have a final prize from our Wyndham people. So we're going to be giving away Wyndham t-shirts too, Catfish. So let's hear it.
And they are Wyndham beard level t-shirts.
Okay.
Basically from 1 to 10.
Right.
1 being wizard hopeful.
Right.
4 being wizard in training.
Okay.
7 being wizard expert. Right. And 10 being wizard beard level.
Wow. So in addition to some of the great Game of Thrones prizes we're going to be giving away, we've also got some prizes from Wyndham Hotels. Thank you, Wyndham Wizard, for sending them to us. And we'll be giving them away at the end of the season.
Listen, usually we pull names out of a hat and there's only two or three people walk away with some swag.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Sorry. Right? This time, boy, we've got a lot of stuff to send out.
We've got a lot of prizes.
Holy cow. Hey, Wyndham, could you send us some money for stamps, please, too?
Right. Okay, real quick, I want to explain that I have to say this all the time. We are not what I like to call double P.
Double P.
Professional podcaster. So if I haven't explained the rules, let me just once again generally explain them to you.
Explain the rules.
You can enter multiple ways, but
really?
I should point out that, for example, one of the ways you can enter to win one of these great prizes is tweet out with the hashtag Joffrey of Podcast. Now, if you tweet it out multiple times, you're still only going to be entered in the contest once.
What?
But you can then go and give us a written review on iTunes. If you do that, that could be your second entry, your second chance to win a prize.
Okay, all right. So you can win by each type of entry.
And what are the other two ways they can enter, Catfish?
You can give a review on Stitcher.
That's exactly right. That's a third way you can have an enter, a third way to have your name in the big bowl to win a prize. And, of course, the fourth way is go to our Facebook page. That's what, Catfish?
That's facebook.com/ the word double,
right,
the letter P, and then the word podcasts.
Yep.
DoubleePodcasts.
I hope you spelled that right.
I think so.
I lost track. Okay, so you like our Facebook page, you tweet out Joffrey of Podcast, you give us an iTunes written review, and if you give us a Stitcher review, you can get your name 4 times in the bowl. There are going to be a lot of prizes we're giving away, and there are right now already a lot
It's going to be a huge bowl.
It is going to be a huge bowl. I just want to make sure everybody knows. Everybody gets their thing in, so we're really, because this is episode 6, we're going to be giving these away in 4 weeks, in a month, Catfish. We're going to be giving away all these prizes.
Holy cow.
Holy cow.
I cannot wait.
You're going to have to wait.
My excitement is legion.
Tormund, what are you doing here? Where's Catfish?
He's with Brienne. I would kill him for that.
Okay, that doesn't sound nice at all there.
Hey, listen, as the Wyndham Wizard, he's wacky. But
he is a wacky
as Tormund, you don't want to mess with him.
All right, so let's get into this episode. And one of the things we did, Catfish, is this episode starts off right after R.I.P., pour one out for Hodor, holding the door. And so I always wondered, people are wondering, how are Bran and Meera going to be able to get away from this zombie attack? And I was saying, well, how long did Hodor hold the door? Did he hold the door long enough to where they could escape? Let's hear it. How long did Hodor hold the
door? We're
going to
have a couple different discussions about this because we have a disagreement here.
Oh,
two disagreements.
Oh.
All right. Hodor holded the door
yes.
for 2 minutes, 3 seconds,
okay.
and 24 one-hundredths of a second.
Okay, so he gave him pretty much a two-minute head start.
Yes, except for the fact that Meera is pulling Bran
in a sled. Right.
In a sled.
In the snow.
He's heavier than her. Yes, he's clearly heavier than her. At least he's unwieldy. At least, let's face that.
Right.
The snow, it's not like a paved nice slalom. I'm sure there's rocks and bumps and stuff.
Sure.
And what do we know most about the White Walkers? What's their natural environment? Is it the sun?
You saying
is it the beach?
It's on their turf.
It is on
dragging.
Their turf.
But I'm saying if you gave me a two-minute head start, you would never catch me. I'm too fast,
right.
baby. Thanks for holding the door, Hodor.
And what I'm saying is if you gave me a two-minute start,
yeah.
you'd catch me in about a minute.
Oh, okay. All right. We also wanted to know how long was the previously on because they're pulling so much stuff from the past. They're like, hey, we got to remind you of Edmure Tully. We got to remind you of the Blackfish Tully. We got to remind you of all this stuff. How long is the previously on for tonight's episode, Catfish?
They managed to outlast Hodor.
Okay.
Previously on was 2 minutes, 13 seconds, and 32 one-hundredths of a second.
Heck yeah.
It lasted more than 10 seconds than Hodor did. Rest in peace, Hodor. This is my question for you.
Yeah, let's hear it.
What percentage do you want to give to the two people who ended up saving Bran and Meera? They couldn't have survived if it wasn't both for Hodor and also for Uncle Benjen.
Ooh, great
so
question.
So who gets more credit?
Who gets more credit? You have to give it to Hodor. There's no way they could have gotten to Uncle Benjen if Hodor hadn't held the door.
I would disagree. I was saying Hodor didn't need to hold the door. All he needed to do was open the door, and then if Benjen had been there 40 seconds earlier, wouldn't have been a problem. So I'm going to say, and this is what kind of, I think this is why I was frustrated by Hodor's sacrifice.
Okay.
In other words, his sacrifice was only good to save them 2 minutes. You know, his entire life was to save him 2 minutes. If he actually had saved them all by himself, that would have been something. But it's basically because Benjen stopped to eat some rabbit jerky on his way to save them. That's the only reason why Benjen wasn't there. I give him 67%.
So you're giving Benjen 2/3 of the credit for his skin.
All right. I am.
I would say, where you been, Benjen? Where you been?
Eating rabbit jerky.
Why didn't Benjen help them get to the cave?
He was hungry.
Oh, bro.
He was told to get there, but he was late.
All right. So we're going to get to it, and we're going to deal with this Benjen Stark, Bran stuff, and Meera right here at the beginning. Why? Because there's nothing new in the credits. I thought maybe we could see Sam's family's home, Horn Hill, in the credits, but no, it's the same places we've always visited. We didn't even see the twins in the opening credits, even though we went there during the episode.
The difficulty level of going back in time to enforce to Hodor, the most important thing in your life is to hold the door.
Hold the door.
He has to do that for 30 years and he's mentally disabled. Rather than, hey, let's try and find Benjen around here and get him to hustle his butt up over here. Seems like it would have been easier.
Well, let's debate that when we get to it. And let's start where the episode begins. Pretty much, Meera has been able to drag Bran to the forest, and she is just collapsing. She's having trouble stepping forward. It's just so painful.
Yeah, but this is like me trying to run away from you.
I got to give it up to Meera. She went pretty far with that sledge and Bran. Give it up to her. She got to the woods. There were no trees when we saw her last week in any place. And so,
yeah, that's
work.
Why I give her 8% of the credit.
Okay. You're really cutting Hodor short on credit.
Hodor only got 25. It's 25 to Hodor, 67 to Benjen, 8 to Meera.
So as Mira's dragging him away, Bran is still, his eyes are still whited out. His eyes are still gone. So, Catfish, why don't you lead us through these brand vision quests, because they're incredible. Let's do it. And let's do it with energy, because this was exciting.
All right. The first thing we start off is in a completely new shot we've never seen before.
New shot.
And that is, in the olden days, we see the pyromancers at King's Landing stocking the wildfire barrels.
Yeah, they're filling up these clay jars filled with wildfire. Now, let me stop you right there, Catfish.
Yeah.
And we assume it's the olden days, then it ties into when we later see the Mad King say burn them all. But what if that isn't olden days? What if that's something in the future? Uh-oh. Because of something we later see, and I guess we'll get to it when we get to it. What's the next shot after the pyromancers, Catfish?
The Drogon shot that Tyrion saw in Valyria. Drogon doing a flyover.
Then we see King's Landing, and this is a shot we had seen before in a Bran's vision before. At the beginning of season 4, where Bran touched Weirwood and had a lot of visions, he saw a dragon shadow passing over King's Landing.
All right, and then we see our first ever shot of the Mad King. Burn them all. Now, he doesn't say that right now. He says a little bit later when he shows up for about the seventh time in these visions. But burn them all, he says. Now, this is interesting. We'll talk about this at the end because there's a lot of the same theme going on here.
Well, let me get to it, though. I would have to be completely honest. This Mad King didn't, how do I say it, look as grizzled and as crazy as the Mad King me book reader was expecting. Like the book reader,
agree.
I was almost expecting like Howard Hughes in the Vegas hotel room with the non-cut fingernails because he was afraid of things.
Yeah, the hair all askew.
Yeah,
unshaven.
But
honestly, I would think for these times that even someone normal would look like that, unshaven, crazy beard.
No, I'm with you, but it was good to see the good old Mad King. I'm glad he, like I said, got his IMDb credit. Then we see the Night's King at Hardhome, and we flash to that an awful lot.
Right, and then we see Khaleesi being reborn as a White Walker in Hardhome.
Yep, we see Bran falling out of the tower.
Right, and then we go on our nice travel, and now we see a beautiful sunset north of the Wall.
That's what everybody sees when they do that North of the Wall Disney cruise that is so popular.
It's beautiful, and you know what's more beautiful than the sunset north of the Wall?
What?
Catelyn Stark being killed at the Red Wedding. That's what we see next.
So Bran theoretically has visions of his mom getting killed. How horrific. How terrible. It starts repeating. Dare I say it, like history is repeating itself.
The Dany scene, the birth of the dragons, which you look at it in slow motion, looks like something's very wrong with her face, which means the special effects not too great there.
We see the Night's King holding one of Craster's sons, and he's turning wet Craster's son.
Right, and then we see the wildfire.
We see the Mad King again. Then we see the Night's King. We see Khaleesi. So these scenes are repeating themselves. We see Catelyn Stark get her throat slit. Then once again, Drogon flying over Valyria from Tyrion. Point of view.
And then a dragon, perhaps the same.
Right.
Flying over King's Landing. We see the birth of the dragon again. Then we see the Craster baby with a White Walker. White Walker shot from above and then turning the baby again. And then we see a new shot that we haven't seen in this, which is what I like to call No Head Ned.
We see Ned's death again. Bran had not seen any of this. So he's seen his mother die. Now he sees how his father dies.
But Bran's having his own very fast previously on.
Right. So it repeats again. Shot north of the Wall. Drogon flying over Valyria. The shadow over King's Landing. We see Dany's birth of the dragons. We see the Night's King holding Craster's son. He turns Craster's son then.
The Raven Party, the Raven Rave, I like to call it, the double R.
Double R.
Raven Rave. After Sam kills the White Walker.
Yeah, he did that in season 3 after he and Gilly escaped.
And then we go inside the Three-Eyed Raven cave. Maybe this is just
roots.
A reminiscent Bran missing it already.
Then we see the pyromancers pouring out the green wildfire.
Yeah, yeah. And then we see a close-up, and they're doing a really super heavy pour.
Right, that's like when the bartender gives you a good pour. They were pouring a lot of wildfire.
Bam. And then we see the Mad King on the throne again, angry.
And then something really new, Catfish.
Whoa, and this is definitely not something that happened in the past. Because what do we know about wildfire? It spreads like wildfire.
Oh, okay, sorry. Yeah, it is there down in this chamber of wildfire, blowing up with that green explosion.
Very dangerous, and it starts coming down the hallway, and we're like, whoa, that is not good. Let's just say, what we know about wildfire, if a entire repository, a market of wildfire got burned up like that, you would imagine it would pretty much blow up the main building, wouldn't it? The building that it's in.
It'd destroy.
Do you think they were smart enough to not put it in the castle? Let's put it over at Jack's house. Jack, you got room in your basement.
Catfish, I'm going to do what I like to call a Better Call Call right now.
Oh, already? Let's hear it.
I think we're going to see that explosion of wildfire this season.
You think we're going to see it this season?
It obviously hasn't happened in the past, or else
right?
It might have been referred to as, hey, we got to be careful.
Well, yeah, it would have been referred to when they said, yeah, remember, we rebuilt this building.
So what do you think? Is that something we'll see maybe next season or in the final season?
Gosh, I would think it'd be next season. Also, my concern is,
yeah,
I guess they restocked their wildfire? I mean, they used a bunch of it.
Yeah, you would assume they used all of it. They implied they used all of it in the Battle of the Blackwater back in season 2, episode 9. But
man, this stuff's got to be expensive to make, and we already know they got troubles. After we see the wildfire blowing up, we flash back to the wildfire and the jugs, and then we see a new shot, Jamie drawing his sword and approaching the Mad King.
Yes, and this is what it looks like. It looks like present-day Jamie, because he's got present-day Jamie's haircut. Of course, it's really kind of impossible to tell, but he's approaching the Mad King on the throne.
Now, the other thing, there was one other thing you wanted to notice that we see in a wider shot here.
Yeah, in a later scene, we're going to see a wider shot of the throne room there in King's Landing. What's interesting is it's designed the way it was designed in season 2. If you remember the very first episode of season 2, Joffrey is having the throne room kind of redesigned. He's having these kind of fire braziers put in, and they weren't there in season 1, yet they're here in the flashback. So either they didn't want to rebuild this throne room to look as they had it look in season 1, or you're
saying... I don't believe that. I think these guys are smart enough to figure this out. They do a lot of stuff for continuity. I think it's because Joffrey likes to go back to the past. Listen, after the Mad King left, for sure they took those down, right?
Yeah, okay, that's it.
Okay,
that's a great
so then
call.
Joffrey put them back up again.
Let's do this. That's a great call.
When you have a guy who's like burned them all,
right,
you're like, maybe we'll take that out. But Joffrey, traditionalist.
That all right. is a great point.
And then we see young, sexy Ned at the Tower of Joy. Dude. We puzzled over this, mm-hmm. right? We puzzled over this, and Bubba, I think you were right in the end, so why don't you say exactly what you thought you saw? Because first, I thought I saw a bloody hand near what was looked something like the color of a horse that had a stab wound
right.
in it.
It was a bloody hand, very bloody hand, covered in blood, and next to it was something like you would think maybe a horse carcass. Another
that,
hand
right.
next to it.
But the main hand was clearly a man's hand.
Right.
And the other hand looked like either a teenager's hand or a woman's more delicate hand. And in the end, you thought what about that shot, which went by so fast?
I had never seen this bloody hand before. And the only thing that made sense to me is this was perhaps a shot of Robb Stark after his hand had touched his wife's belly, Talissa's belly at the Red Wedding. Maybe it was a shot of his hand. So, listeners...
Bran might as well see them all go, right?
Right. Yeah, why not? Because he's about to see Robb go in a second. So, listeners, if that is Robb's hand from the Red Wedding, tweet at us, go to our Facebook page, and let us know. Or if that's a brand new shot of a hand we haven't seen before.
All right, and then we see Jamie killing the Mad King with a sword.
Oh, yeah. Stabs him right in the back. Ouch.
That's the way to do it. If you're going to disobey your orders.
Go the full 9 yards.
The full 9 yards. Then we have Roose Bolton stabbing Robb.
Right.
And then we have a long shot. I don't mean like a long shot because it lasted about 1/10 of 1 second, but a wide shot of Jamie standing over the stabbed Mad King. And then Jamie kind of kneels down and gives it to him again in the back. Because what's better than one stab in the back?
Multiple stabs in the back.
Bingo.
Somebody on Periscope said Jamie stuck him with a pointy end. Heck yeah, Jamie and Arya together.
That's the way to
again.
Do it. It's the first time he stuck anybody besides Cersei with it.
Now, we've had some people in the Periscope. They say maybe that bloody hand is a scene we haven't seen before, and it's a scene they assume we might see later on when Ned goes to find out what happened
it
to
his sister.
It seems
a little too specific, though. The things we haven't seen before were clear enough to understand exactly what was going on,
right.
and this one wasn't. So maybe, like you said, one of our viewers can look at the episode where Robb was taken out and where Catelyn was taken out and see if that scene's from there.
All right. So what did we see next in Bran's vision?
Well, then we saw Raven in the forest.
Right.
And then we saw Robb. This was awesome. And we'd seen Robb getting stabbed before, but now we see Robb slow-mo fall to his knees in front of Catelyn.
Yeah, Bran is seeing all of his family members die. This is not
boom.
Not.
And then we see the Children of the Forest creating the first White Walker. Then we have the Battle of Hardhome, Jon fighting a White Walker. And then another new scene of Jaime sitting on the throne after killing the Mad King. How does this feel? And then we see the wildfire, which when we first saw it was exploded sort of in the back of the hallway. And now we see it coming closer to the front as it's going to pick up more steam as it goes by more barrels of
wildfire. Let me tell you something, Catfish. I've now paused our screen on the scene of the bloody hand. And, you know, Rob was wearing kind of very dark clothing for the wedding ceremony of his uncle Edmure to Rosalind Frey. And actually now I'm disagreeing with myself. I don't think that's Rob's hand because that clothing is kind of more brown-like. So maybe this is.
No, it does look like a horse still to me. It's so, I don't know.
Yeah, it's tough to tell. Oh, my gosh.
That's an interesting one. If anyone can stop it. And look and see the scene we're talking about where we see a man's bloody hand. There's a smaller hand next to it. And then there's something that's clearly been stabbed.
Yeah, or it's like a cut in it and it's covered in blood. So maybe it's something we've seen before that I just don't remember. Is it possible that that's Maester Lewin when he dies?
Oh, no.
Anyway, tweet at us. Go to our Facebook page. Let's get the prognosticating. Let's hear your Better Call calls on what it is.
Oh, all right, man.
So finish us off on this Raven quest.
They figured us up. I will, just like Jaime, I will finish you off.
Like you did the Mad King. All right,
So we've got Drogon of Valyria, dragons over King Landing, Dany, birth of dragons, Night King's holding Craster Sun, turning Craster Sun. Then we see something we haven't seen, maybe we have seen before, but I don't recognize it. We see the shadow. Is this on the wall?
Right.
Of a person stabbing a king in the back. Now, the person stabbing the king doesn't look like they are have full armor on.
Yeah,
to me.
The shadow doesn't really line up with what we just saw, but because it's so close to the Mad King being stabbed in the back, I'm going to assume that was part of it. It's tough to tell. You're right, the shadows don't line up with those two characters, but
yeah.
That's what I'm going to go with.
It could be the theater company doing a reenactment of it. Then we see the crows again after Sam kills the White Walkers.
Right.
Children with the White Walker again. And then we see Bran. We go back to Bran. And then we go back to Bran falling again. We love Bran falling. We have the pyromancers checking the wildfire.
Right.
The Mad King yelling.
Yep.
Then we're back to the pyromancers doing their, how does this look good? And then the Battle of Hardhome, the White Walkers rushing the wall and breaking through the gate. And then the Night King does his come at me, bro pose.
Love
it. We see that again.
Love it.
After we see that, we see Bran's vision of the White Walkers at the tree from last week when he had a vision of them being
right.
at the tree.
Yeah, love it.
And then we had Hardhome getting stormed by the White Walkers. Then we're back to the Bran there, and it's panning around. Then we see the White Walkers charging at Hardhome. Then we go back to Bran. We're still panning, but nothing happens. Then we see Hardhome, the White Walkers over the cliff. The Night's King at Hardhome, come at me, bro. We see Hardhome fighting. Then kids at Hardhome. John watching Hardhome.
Yeah.
We see the White Walkers on horses at the Battle of the Fist.
Oh, wow.
And then we see Hardhome again. Then we see the Night's King on a horse watching Hardhome. Back to the Battle of Fist. And then Bran, Pan.
Yeah, the Fist of the First Men.
To getting touched by the Night's King. Sometimes when we touch, it's really cold, you dead bastard.
Well, what did you think of this, Catfish? What did you think of these visions? Did you like the Mad King? Once again, I said he didn't look like I said he would, but the fact he's yelling, burn them all, I love it. Love it, love it, love it. I'm glad we got to see him.
And I'm glad they were so fast. We had to slow things down super, super slow to see them.
Oh, yeah.
And I just don't understand why there were so many repeats of things over and over again. Like to see the guys filling up the wildfire and then pouring out the wildfire and then later on wildfire blowing up, and that's exciting. To see the same exact scenes of Craster baby turned into a White Walker baby
right.
like five times, that seemed a little too much.
Let me say that I personally thought the editing trick of these scenes going so fast, it just did raise the tension. It raised like, oh, dear Lord, what in the world is going on right now? So
I just wish I could see that many things before you catch me.
So did you like Benjen Stark's rescue? I kind of thought that this was, we have had some great action, tense action in the past. While I kind of like some of the moves that happened here, I did not feel like this was great action. Benjen Stark's
rescue. And I'll tell you why. There's two reasons. One is because there seemed to be about 120 of them in the cave, and there was eight of them here. The other one is they came at him one at a time. Okay. So it just wasn't that thrilling of a fight. Although I did like the skeletons being dragged into things and being totally disintegrating, being dragged into a tree.
Right.
That was fun.
Some of the moves within it I actually really liked a lot, but it didn't have the tenseness that we had last week in the cave attack. And let me say that I found it interesting when I first watched all those Brand's visions that R.I.P. Hodor didn't appear in any. You know, he didn't flash back to the sacrifice that was made, so he could
escape. He did his job. He lasted for 2 minutes and 3 seconds. Quick question for you, Bubba.
Yeah.
I know you're not really a motorcycle rider, but just to let you know, when you have someone as a passenger, it's called, and I didn't make this up, I know it's kind of sexist, it's called riding bitch. So Mira is riding bitch. Now, however, that's got to be a superior position to being thrown over the neck of a horse on your stomach. So what's a worse term than that we would describe how Bran is riding on that horse? I was going to say he's riding punk.
I was going to say he's riding Branish. I mean, oh my goodness gracious.
Oh yeah. Here we go. We're going to call that riding reek.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Perfect. Thank you so much to our Periscope listeners. Riding reek it is. Bran is riding reek on this horse.
This was really a good moment, and I have to be honest, I predicted it when I saw the preseason trailer that this would have to be Benjen. But let's jump ahead in time, and Benjen hates bunnies. Benjen was chopping up a bunny and feeding what I like to call double B.
Double B?
Bunny blood to Bran. So it's a triple B, Bran's bunny blood.
What I like here is there's an interesting parallel, because what happens before this is that Samuel's father essentially says killing rabbits is for punks.
Right.
And it's not a manly thing to do. And I think if Samuel's father ran into Benjen Stark, he would piss his pants so hard. He'd do a double P.
Double P.
Pants pissing.
Oh, no.
So I thought it was a funny, subtle comment on a scene that happened earlier.
Well, let's get to it. Are you glad to see Benjen missing? Benjen disappeared in the third.
I was glad to see him missing.
He disappeared in the third episode of season one. Are you glad missing Benjen Stark is back, Catfish? And do you like this explanation that he gives about where he's been? He said that he and his party had been riding north hunting for White Walkers. That's interesting that he was specifically hunting for White Walkers. Okay, and he said they were attacked, and the White Walker stabbed him in the stomach. But before they could rise him from the dead, the children of the forest saved him. And they saved him in the exact same method that they created the White Walker. So poor Uncle Benjen has got a dragonglass blade in his chest. Ouch!
Is that his explanation for A, why he hasn't made contact with anybody in 5 years, and B, why he shows up 2 minutes late to the party here?
Right. Why didn't that? Well, you're asking why.
Where the heck has he been?
Right. After the children of the forest saved him, why didn't he go back to the wall and say, "Hey, you got a big problem here"?
Did he think he was going to handle things all by himself?
Well, maybe because he was saved and apparently he talked to the Three-Eyed Raven. Maybe he was given like a mission.
I'm going to call him Double C from now on.
Double C?
Yeah, chicken shit cold hands.
Now, here on the Joffrey podcast, we don't talk about the books too much. But you just brought up something, Catfish, that is really a book mystery. There's this character in the books. You don't know anything about him because he never shows his face, that he calls himself Cold Hands. It turns out that the producers are now saying that Uncle Benjen is Cold Hands.
Quick question for you, though. You are an intense book reader.
I am.
Wasn't that your assumption?
No, I had never assumed he was, because in the book they described this character, Cold Hands, as they said he was killed a long time ago. To me, that didn't read as Uncle Benjen, who, even though you're hearing this in the third book, he really had only been killed a year or two previously, so I didn't think it. Then this document came out. This document came out where George R. R. Martin's editor asked him, "Hey, is Cold Hands covering his face because he's Benjen? And is that why Bran doesn't recognize him?" And George Martin wrote back to his publisher, he said no. So many people took that to mean that Cold Hands isn't Benjen. Now, there's a small chance that George R. R. Martin was saying no, that's not the reason why he's covering his face, but it's kind of crazy. Some people, I've seen online, some people are assuming that this is just a show invention to combine the two characters. I don't know how to read it from a book perspective.
But wouldn't it be better if Cold Hands was somebody we knew? I mean, for example, a character went away and is unaccounted for, and then there's this other character out there kicking ass and taking names, even though he's chicken shit Cold Hands. All right, one of our Periscope listeners made a good point. Said yes. Sam's pet name for Gilly.
What is it?
Cold Hands. He wishes he felt those hands on him.
Oh, goodness gracious. So let's get to the end of this brand scene. Where
right, because Uncle Benjamin, there's some good information here.
Uncle Benjamin tells him something. I got all this information from the Three-Eyed Raven. Now you're here. You're going to have to do it. And he said, listen, the Night King is going to find his way to the realm of man. And when he does, you've got to be there and you've got to be ready to fight him.
Wow.
So what's interesting when he says the Night's King will find his way to the realm of man, you would assume that means south of the wall. And just from taking Uncle Benjen's sentence literally, it implies to me that Bran's going to go south of the wall. And maybe this prediction, which I didn't think would be true, is that because Bran has the Night's King's mark, when Bran goes south of the wall, that's the way the Night's King will get there. Ugh.
I can't imagine in any way, shape, or form
how
Bran is expected to stop anybody. This is a guy who's riding Reek on a horse. Okay? He can't do anything unless he can warg into about 1,000 different soldiers at once, which aren't even there. Make a call here. What do you think Bran's job is going to be here? What is, quote unquote, the Three-Eyed Raven's job? Apparently that's his job. He's got his job title now. And apparently the old job description was hang out in a tree for 1,000 years. And the new job description is kill and defeat all the White Walkers. Hey, thanks. That's not the job I applied for.
Somebody said that the Three-Eyed Raven's old job was, quote unquote, tree hugger.
I don't think there was just hugging going on. I was going to say he was there for a long time.
I'm going to go the other way and say that Bran, I always go back to what he was told at the end of season 4. He's like, Bran, you will not walk, but you will fly. So Bran is either going to warg into some powerful beast like a dragon and kill this SOB Night King, or we saw that flock of ravens, and I always thought it'd be great if Bran could, you know, use his skin changing, his warging ability to get into a bunch of animals and just have this animal attack, you know, lead an animal attack of ravens attack the zombies.
That leads me to another philosophical question.
Okay.
As far as warging into things, does it only matter how complex they are? For example, you know, a human being is more complex than a rabbit. But a dragon, even though it's bigger and more fierce, you wouldn't imagine is as mentally complex as a human being. And then if it's a bird, which is not complex at all, can you warg into a bunch of different birds at the same time?
These are
lots of questions I have for you.
Yeah, I tend to think you can. I'm not sure the show has shown this, but that would be my thought. Once again, I apologize. I'm bringing a bit of what I like to call double B.
Double B?
Book bias into this prediction. But that is my thought. And so let's just get to it. We had a question in the Periscope.
Someone did say in the Periscope, they reminded us, mandatory, said, Bran flew once.
Oh, he did?
But did not nail the landing.
No, I don't think that's what the Three-Eyed Raven meant when he said that.
I disagree, however. I think there was a nail on the ground.
Yes.
And Bran totally drove that nail into the piece of wood that was underneath it with his body.
We also had a question in Periscope, Catfish, about, do you believe Bran is going north somehow, or he's heading south of the wall? What do you think for the rest of this season Bran is doing? Is he going to stay north of the wall, or is he going to go south of the wall? What do you think?
I believe he's going to go south.
That is your call?
He's got to be there. Benjen's is going to decide where Bran goes.
Benjen's horse is...
Okay? And Benjen said, we're going to the wall so you can be there ahead of time.
Okay.
Bran's not going to say, you go there, I'm going to walk myself over to here.
Here's somebody in Periscope saying Bran's going to go the other way. He's going to go up north to that infamous ice obelisks where they turned Craster's babies into White Walkers.
Why would they go up there?
Well, why would they go south of the wall? Bran's got to learn stuff. He's still not ready to fight them, you agree?
Well, I agree because I don't think that the previous Three-Eyed Raven's job was to fight stuff. So he's got to learn what the previous Three-Eyed Raven knew. And then apparently he's got to learn some new stuff that the Three-Eyed Raven didn't even do before. But this Three-Eyed Raven was sitting around while the White Walkers were growing and growing and growing. And all he was doing was loving up on the tree.
He was chilling out.
He was chilling out all right.
All right. So are you ready to go to what I like to call the double S scene?
The double S scene?
The sword stealer. The sword stealing Sam, the triple S.
Triple S. You always, with Samwell, there's always a triple S in there, even if you don't remember it.
Let's be honest. I got a tweet when this happened from Dooley's left leg on Twitter, which said, hashtag skip ahead. He was not ready for this.
My question is, how can he even think this is a good idea?
Well, he's
in what world does he think this is a good idea? His father threatened him, do not leave or I will kill you.
True, but Sam, the end result that Sam wanted, he ended up getting, but then he didn't like the terms. He brought Gilly and baby Sam there to his house, his family's keep. Why? Because he wanted Gilly taken care of. He wanted this baby taken care of while he went to Old Town to train to be a maester. And that it was mission accomplished. He dropped the mission accomplished banner at Hornhill, and he succeeded. But because his dad was such a Papa Tarly, such a double D.
Double D?
Daddy douche. That Sam could not stay.
Pause.
Yeah.
For the laughter.
And so, oh my gosh, come on. I thought, Sam, sometimes you have to just suck it up, grin and bear it. So Sam is bringing Gilly home, and I often talk about the positive work of effects and the great effects work on this show. I am not a huge fan of the Hornhill digital compositing of this house, this castle up on a mountaintop here. It didn't seem as believable as some of their other effects did to me.
Well, first of all, Samwell, who knew? I mean, this looks better
than Winterfell.
This looks more like the Roman senator's chamber.
Right, yeah. He's living better than some of the great lords, like the Lord of the Iron Islands. Pike is dump. The Eyrie doesn't look as nice as this because you got to climb so high to get to it, and there's a hole in the middle of the floor. Winterfell dump, like every place. This place looks great.
Yeah, it does look great. Although, again, how do you explain that the kid is blonde?
You let off with again, which is one of your buzzwords, Catfish. When did you earlier mention the kid being blonde?
I believe, actually, you mentioned it while we were watching the episode.
Okay, so the again is for no one, for only me,
it's for you.
Okay.
It's for you.
So, yeah, where did this kid get his blonde good looks from? Craster. What do you think of Sam's mom and his sister here, Catfish? They are having a warm family welcome.
Yeah, I think they are double P.
Double P.
Punch pleased by Samwell's return.
Yeah, they are. And they are very nice to Gilly and baby Sam. It's the mother side of the family, the sister side of the family, that created the Sam we know. Now, later on, Sam's brother doesn't seem as big a douche as Double D douche dad does.
He's working on it, though.
Right. If he could hunt a bit better, he could.
Yeah. As soon as he starts hitting animals from 80 yards, it's over.
And so let's just get to it. This scene creates an awkward family dinner. It was, you know,
it was guess who's coming to dinner, the Wildling edition.
We had the awkward family dinner with Sansa and the Boltons last year, and now we have the more awkward family
dinner.
Let
me just say, I was cringing during this entire scene, and I thought it was a great scene.
You did, and you normally you want to skip Sam scenes.
I do. I do want to triple S skip Sam's scenes. However, it was so cringe-inducing. You wanted Sam to say something, but then in the next scene, he kind of explains why.
This guy, Lord. Did you like Gilly's new dress, new look? She looks real pretty, even if she doesn't know how to use utensils.
Yeah, she's real pretty for a wildling. Lady, your curls curl up nice.
And Sam's father, he was really didn't say much at the very beginning. He was waiting for his moment to attack Sam, and he did something which, if he did this on social media, Randall Tarly would be in big trouble. He fat-shamed his son.
He did. He did. But also he managed to hunt-shame his son. Because Sam asked, is this from what you caught today? And they're like, hello, curing. Have you heard of curing?
Right. Now, I have to be honest. We just missed a great thing that somebody in Periscope just said. We forgot to body shame. Body shame. Like Sam's father did. And so this, to me...
Important when yeah. you're body shaming someone or fat shaming someone.
Yeah.
Let them know, hey, ease up on the carbs. You can have more venison, right. but you got to cut the carbs, bro.
This, to me, really reminded me of an episode of... They do it every year in The Bachelor, where the bachelor brings home a woman to meet his family. You know, this was just tough. Gilly starts off by trying to defend Sam, and that's where the trouble really comes in. She says, you know, he's a good hunter. He catches stuff. He's a good warrior. I've seen him kill a fen, and if she had stopped there, it would have been fine, but she had
to. They wouldn't have believed her, though. They would have laughed her out.
Well, they don't believe in White Walkers. Sam's brother, Dickon, and that isn't a slip of the tongue. That's his name, Dickon, laughs when he hears Gilly says, White Walker. Right.
There's very few people who believe in White Walkers.
No, yeah, very few at all. And so when Gilly said that, and she said when he was escorting me down to the wall, ooh. Oh, boy.
Yikes. I mean...
And Gilly tries to cover. She's like, well, it's just a colloquialism. I was born in a keep near the wall, and he was escorting me down to, you know... Oh, boy. Youch.
Yeah, that is complete trouble. But Samwell tries to explain his whole plan here, and Dad's just having none of it.
Somebody in Periscope says they should have reminded Gilly what happens north of the wall stays north.
Boy. Oh, man. It's so rough. I mean, again... His father, I guess Samuel was ready to be shamed in any way possible. Fine, just let me go. You're not going to hurt me because I'm leaving, but just take my beautiful wife.
Take my beautiful wife, please.
This is not my beautiful manor. This is not my beautiful wife.
He's a talking head.
This is not my beautiful child.
So the dad is a complete douche, but he does, once again, he does achieve Sam's original objective. He's like, okay, I'll let the wildling woman stay here and work in the kitchen, and I'll have the baby raised here. The two things are safe.
Yes, but that is tough. He's taking the baby away from Gilly. That just seems cruel.
True. But what is Sam's plan now? Is his plan now, F it, I just hate the old man, we'll figure something out? Or could he have maybe gone to the Citadel for a while, then come back and figured, you know what I mean? He was going to leave her and go to the Citadel. Couldn't he have left her there for a couple of months, and then once he came up with a better plan?
I mean, as far as we know,
yeah,
there's really nowhere safe between the White Walkers and the fighting between the kingdoms, and the fact that we've never heard of the Tarly family before clearly means that even though they're rich, they may not be involved in the politics too much or the fighting. So this is probably the safest place for her. I agree. Keep her safe and figure something out later.
And just so everybody knows, Sam's family, the Tarlys, they live in an area known as the Reach, which is controlled by the Tyrells. And so it's a bit surprising that this, you know, vassal to Lord Mace Tyrell wasn't called up to King's Landing to help save Mace's daughter Margaery from the Faith of the Seven.
Yeah, I mean, we have never heard, again, we keep hearing all the names in the north
right.
for people who are going to come and help Sansa. And we've heard some other names throughout some of the other kingdoms, but we've never heard the Tarlys before.
Yeah, I thought it was real interesting that they bring up the Umbers again. So
they're like the Switzerland.
Who are the Switzerland? The Tarlys?
The Tarlys. We stay out at the Vaux. We build nice houses. It's all good.
Right. It was real interesting that we saw Sam's mother mention, oh, we met a Umber who taught his daughters to hunt. And so that's just the way they do it in the Nor. And so when he starts calling Gilly a whore, that's the biggest douche you can go. And why Sam didn't speak up and defend her right then is a bit shocking. Sam?
Well, again, this is his plan. He doesn't want to piss off his father. You're exactly right. He gets kind of what he wanted.
Right.
I mean, clearly he did not want to make it known that she was a wildling, but she's clearly not a classy woman. They would have figured out on one hand or the other. I mean, let's face it. She was not a whore. But as far as the father would be concerned, she's just not from a proper family anyway. So she's basically low goods anyway.
Right. And he's calling the baby Sam a half-breed. Ooh. It's worse if he had called her a mudblood.
Right. What he doesn't know is that it is actually a full breed.
Oh, do you miss Craster? You know, because the one daughter said, boy, we could learn a thing from Gilly's father. You could learn a lot of things from Craster.
Oh, boy. That's what I like to call the double C.
Double C.
The Craster Cosby.
Oh. And let me say, Randall Tarley, he really did a bit of terrible foreshadowing when he said, you will never wield Heartsbane. That, of course, is terrible foreshadowing. Of course, that means Sam's going to grab that sword. What do we know about Valyrian steel swords? They can battle White Walkers. Is that why Sam's taking it? Or is his dad just such a jerk? He's like, hey, I'm the firstborn son. This sword should be mine. F you. I'm taking your sword. I'm hitting the road.
Again, the dad is not only very rich, but he likes to have important art on his wall. And Samuel just said, you know what? I'm taking your favorite piece.
Yes, I loved Sam leaving in some ways and hated it in other ways. Once again, Sam,
when he left
will.
The first time, the fake exit that Sam left,
yeah,
I was as upset with him as his father. I thought,
wow.
You know what? You're proving what your father said.
Okay.
That you are just spineless.
So you loved this scene and you loved him coming back and defending his woman.
Loved when he came back. I actually honestly thought that when he was standing to get the sword, that he would fall off the little stool he was on.
And get caught stealing it?
Maybe not caught, but just, you know, every time he tries to do something valiant, it sort of shows his true colors.
All right, let's have a better call. Where do you think Sam, little Sam and baby Gilly are going with this stolen sword?
Whew. Goodness. Well, where can they go?
This is the safest
place for them. He can't take her to the Citadel.
She'd have to get a job. How are they going to support themselves? So it'll be interesting to see. It's setting up a lot of questions. This is something book readers don't know. And so you wonder what will happen.
Well, make the call. What's he going to do? I'm going to say that he's been charged with a task.
Okay.
And that task is to go to the Citadel. So let's say he goes to the Citadel. He does start, but then he hears about John and then has to wend his way back up to join John.
With that Valyrian steel sword. That certainly could be. All right, Catfish, if we're done there at Horn Hill, let's go to...
Well, Samwell definitely is.
Let's go to King's Landing. In the very first scene...
K.L.
The very first scene in King's Landing is an important scene. We see the High Sparrow, and he's leading Tommen, lighting some candles there in the Great Sept of Baelor. And I don't like him at all, but he is a great manipulator, and Tommen is totally falling under his control, his power.
Yeah, he is just being hornswoggled here. And I have to say, since you are usually a far thinker, and I'm in the moment here,
right?
You probably sensed the seeds of destruction for this plan being sown in this scene.
When it came up a couple episodes ago, the episode you loved a couple episodes, and I was kind of down on episode 4, I really thought that this plan would blow up in Jaime, Cersei, and the Tyrells' face. In some ways...
Right, but when you did, you at least promised me that... Or not promised me,
but you suspected
it would blow up in a spectacular way.
It did blow... I still think it blew up in a spectacular way, just not with any violence, though. You know, you hear about a takeover. This was a soft takeover.
The last time we saw Marjorie,
yeah,
she was with her brother, and it seemed like she was still telling him to hold on strong and that she hadn't given in. But now she appears to have given in. But this cannot be true.
This cannot be true. This is what I thought she would be doing from the very beginning. I thought Marjorie is too smart and too cunning. She is smarter than the High Sparrow. And so she'll find a way to co-opt him and, you know, get on his good side. And that's exactly what she did. And Tommen is a bit blown away by this. And I'm really glad that she didn't let Tommen in on, hey, Tommen, this is just a ruse. I'm going to say and act the way I need to act so I can get out of this.
Well, she knows he's no Joffrey.
That is completely, completely true. Did you at any time think Marjorie had officially changed, or you knew that this is just a ruse? Or were you like, were you ever like Tommen? Did you ever buy this conversion?
I might have. Some of the last few scenes she's had with the Sparrow have been decent, and she's kind of has sold that,
right.
And she's done it in a smart way where she sold sort of a slow acceptance. You can't like be in the jail for one day and go, you know what, I believe, I absolutely believe, I'm all in, I'm all in, it's all good, it's all good. What, he walks, he flies, he swims, whatever, I agree in everything. However, we saw that last one scene with her brother, and so I assume this is a ruse.
I would assume the same thing, and I wondered if she wasn't kind of using her brother's words as an inspiration. Her brother, last time we saw Sir Loras there in the cell, he said, let them win. You know, she's like, we can't let him win, and Loras was like, let him win. And I wonder if that's what convinced Marjorie to, oh, okay, the way to get out of this is to let him think he wins.
Right, absolutely. And then smartly,
yeah,
she realizes, since Tommen is no Joffrey, that easily manipulated. Tommen is like a 3-year-old child, and in that, the last thing you say to him, he's going to believe.
No, that, yeah. We all need to be better people.
Yeah, better sure people.
Thing. All right. My soul needs
no, wait,
to be
worse
pure.
People? Okay, worse people. I agree. Let's be worse. Oh, no, good people. Oh, good people. Of course, I believe that.
And so then we get to the storming of the Walk of Atonement. And
the attempted storming, let's call it that.
Right, the showdown that became a no-down. One of the things that I really love about this is Mace Tyrell, Loras and Marjorie's father, that bumbling buffoon.
Oh, my God.
He's bringing the troops, and he's riding on his horse, and he's ready. But his horse is literally being led in. It's not like he's riding it like Jamie. He has somebody walking his horse for him as he's on top of it. That is brilliant.
Also, he needs to work on his public speaking, because to call his troops super jazzed by his speech would be a little excessive.
You're saying this isn't a Braveheart speech right here?
They're all in the back going, I guess, yeah. Yeah, we'll go.
We'll go. Wait, when do we do this?
Going? Is that?
Did you think he brought enough troops? This is one of the Seven Kingdoms, the Reach that the Tyrells control.
Well, again, what sort of upset me about this, because of what they set up, what they did smartly was add more tension to the scene by having the crowd behind them start to come onto the side.
Of the Sparrow.
So I thought, okay, they got trouble ahead, trouble behind. So I thought this could be great, because they're going to have a conflict with both of these groups. And in that case, they would be outnumbered. So that was smart to add that to the scene.
Okay. Yeah. No, it was tense. It didn't have the violence, the action you love. But I believe the scene was tense. And so they go there.
Oh, I think it was a brilliant plan. I think it was brilliantly done.
Well, who won?
A few seconds before it came out, I was like, oh, crap, they have Tommen.
Right. And this was, let me just say, the Shame Sept is there. Cousin Lancel Lannister is there. And he brought out his power. I mean, look at all his faith militant, as he refers to them, with their clubs. And the peasants are there. Everybody wants to see Marjorie perform a typical Game of Thrones scene where she has to remove all her clothes.
We knew that wasn't going to happen, though. They did not warn us about nudity in the beginning of the show, so we knew for Catfish this is going to be a strictly clothed affair tonight.
What do you think? How bad is it? Because Loras was not seen in this. You assume Loras is still down in his cell. That can't be good.
Well, it can't be good, but it's better than what could have happened had Jaime lost this battle.
That's true. And what's great is, excuse me from stopping your interruption there, Catfish, Marjorie has little, she's such a great actress, Natalie Dormer. She has little signs on her face that lets her know, oh yeah, my family came, hell yeah.
Right, exactly. And that's exactly what I was going to say before you stopped me interrupting you, was that Marjorie gives some looks here like, oh, this is going to be great. I'm ready for this.
I'm free.
So when the turn comes,
right,
it's even better.
It's even more painful. And let me just say it. When I saw that Tommen had his Kingsguard remove the crown from their breastplate,
ooh,
and replace it with the seven-pointed star, the symbol of the faith of the seven,
ouch,
I knew we were in trouble. This was bad, bad news.
Yeah, it's It's not good news.
No.
It's not good news.
It's not good news at all, especially with Jaime saying that, hey, every sparrow will die. And remember, they didn't seek Tommen's permission to do this. Youch.
Well, they knew they couldn't include him.
Right. They couldn't. And, boo, this
was... Because he is a big WW. Wishy-washy.
Does this make you hate Tommen even more? Does this make you... We had the prophecy, which we saw at the beginning of season 5, which said all Cersei's children will die. Does this make you ready for Tommen to just bite it? Because he's so stupid. Why is he doing this?
No, he's horrible. And let's just face it. He finally had his one moment where he finally said one thing that was true. So now his usefulness has ended.
Right.
And it's funny because... We don't usually like to see people who are powerless or manipulated taken out of the picture.
Right.
This is going to be the first time we've seen a puppet get killed that we're going to be happy about. Right?
Yeah, let Tommen go. Now, we had somebody great in the chat room. I think it was Mondo Tori just said in the Periscope chat room, he said, he's got a double D-U.
Double D-U?
Disappointed dad slash uncle. Because Jaime is not happy about this at all. He is more upset in some ways than Cersei, if you ask me.
Oh, he absolutely is. Because he has come back and now he's going to take charge. Because he's more upset than Cersei because, and this is not sexist, this is just the way that men and women have to operate different in this world.
In this Westeros. Yeah.
Men do conflict by armed battle, and women have to be sneaky, and they have to have plots. And so Jamie's only plan, me fight him good, is not going to work here.
Yeah, and to have your son, admittedly nobody can say he's your son, and does Tommen know that Uncle Jaime is actually his father, to have your son dress you down and strip you of your title of Lord Commander of the Kingsguard, youch, Jaime has to remove his armor. This is brutal. I also want to say, if you don't count the Mad King scene, excuse me, in the earlier flashback, season 5 had no scenes in the throne room, and this is the first scene in the throne room in season 6. Can you believe it?
Now, quick question.
Yeah.
If I was Jaime, I feel like I could get off on a technicality. Because Tommen says, when you attack the religion, you attack the crown.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And why can't Jaime say, well, I didn't know y'all had hooked up.
Right. That's a great point. We follow the faith, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we're part of it.
Jaime can say, I get the deal now. I'm good. We good here, right?
Right. I also think that it's got to hurt Jaime a bit that standing next to King Tommen is his hand of the king, Uncle Kevin. And Uncle Kevin was in on this plan, but Uncle Kevin, you know, isn't suffering because of it.
No, but like Tommen, I have a delicious feeling that Uncle Kevin will suffer.
Oh, no.
And suffer gloriously.
Oh, that is painful. So the final scene in King's Landing is Jaime and Cersei commiserating. And Jaime, like I said, he is just PO'd. And Cersei is much calmer. She's not even worried about her upcoming trial because she has, as she describes, the mountain on her side. So even though she's going to have a trial by combat, she's fine with it.
Yeah, because she's got the power on her side. I will say this.
Yeah.
And this is one thing we talk about, the characters that we love and some of the things we miss because our characters aren't together.
Right.
I realized watching the scene, I missed Cersei and her evil plans. She's so much fun to watch, and we do not get enough of her.
Well, her plan right now is to stop Jaime from grabbing Bronn and a lot of cutthroats and killing them all. And saying, listen, Jaime, you've been ordered to lead the Lannister army. That's where Dad Tywin Lannister wanted you to be. Go, you know, go take that castle of Riverrun, help the Freys because they're inept. And then it's fine. You know, we're going to do it.
Yeah, they're going to more than just do that because you know what?
What?
For these two, kill and talk makes them hot. You talk about killing and they get all frisky.
Mondo Tori in Periscope, he said, Cersei's cool because she's got her true love back.
Oh, her true love, Jaime?
No, wine.
Oh, right. That makes more sense.
Ouch. Jaime doesn't want to leave because he knows Cersei's trial's coming up, but she's pretty much saying, go. Go do what you're supposed to do. I'll handle things here. And you know that can't be good. We still have not seen the scene from the trailer where she chooses violence yet, Catfish. When is that going to come?
Well, it is going to come this season.
Oh, yeah.
Do we think it's going to happen in the next episode?
No, I do not.
Okay.
Sadly, I think it might not come in this great moment in the trailer. I think it might not come till the 10th episode.
All right.
What do you think about this passionate love between these twincest we got as they said goodbye? Are you glad that their passion is still alive?
Well, the thing is, I know Jamie really feels true love for Cersei. He said that over and over again. He's mm-hmm. devoted his life to her.
Right.
While on the other hand, she has not been quite so faithful
to him.
No,
you don't think, huh?
No. But to give her credit, yeah. again, because of the different ways that men and women have to attack here, I believe in some ways she's used this for entertainment, but in other ways she's used this for power. She's used sex for power.
Okay.
I'm not going to give her a full bad marks. However, I'm going to say that I think she's still manipulating Jamie. I've never believed she loved him as much as he loves her.
All right, so we've got three more locations we got to get to in this episode, Catfish. Let's go to Essos in the mother of the mountains here near the Dothraki city of Vast Dothrak. We see Daenerys is leading everybody. She's at the head of the Khalasar.
That's not the only thing we see.
What else do we see?
Well, we noticed that they ran out of their budget for extras because she's got about 120 Khalasar with her.
Well, they ride ahead, and then the people who without horses, the walkers, they have to follow behind.
Well, we haven't seen that in the past. They've been all together in the past.
So Daenerys,
and presumably she's going to attack when she gets there, so you're not going to want to show up just with your advance party and then, hey, guys, can you wait for the fight? I got to wait a couple days for people to catch up on foot.
So Daenerys says what I think a million book readers, a million show watchers have been waiting for. She says, we're going to go to Marine, then we're going to get on a bunch of ships, and we're going to go to the Seven Kingdoms.
This is exactly why I was so excited. Because when she burned down the temple, I said, this is it. She's realized, no more futzing around here. I got to do what I said I was originally going to do.
Right.
Let's get on those boats and let's kick some ass.
Well, who has 1,000 ships?
Right now, nobody.
But we know a place where they're going to be built very, very slowly.
Yeah, we do know that. Well, but apparently they may have to. Do you think Yara and Reek are going to, as we see on next week, their plan is to, since we ran away now, we're going to go back and attack.
Right. That'll get
Are you going to wait until they build enough ships so that they'll have a bigger crew?
Right. So what did you think of this final scene of the episode? To me, I wouldn't have ended on this. The episode is titled Blood of My Blood, which is a Dothraki thing people say about blood riders. And Daenerys gets all the blood riders. And rather than just three, she gets all of them bound to her, all of the Dothraki who are left. But it didn't seem that powerful. I know, hey, Daenerys rode on Drogon, and Drogon is gigantic. This thing keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and that is cool.
I was going to give you a hard time because I was going to say, well, since you are the more sexist one because you always hate on Daenerys and you're not as excited as I am about her. I will say, however, that the quote-unquote final exciting to need in next scene in tonight's episode is only two episodes removed from her last final exciting scene, which was way more final and exciting. So
her stepping out of the fire.
Yeah. So to have another moment with Daenerys two episodes later, it just suffers from being so close to a great scene with her.
I completely agree. This did not send it out. In fact, we're going to get in our final scene we cover today what I would have ended the episode on because I feel it so kind of foreshadowing and scary. But let's get to those final two locations. And one is, even though it wasn't in the opening credits, darn it, let's go to the twins and let's see an old dirty bastard, ODB, we have not seen in quite a long time, Lord Walder Frey.
Yeah.
And here he's got two of his many sons, and he is double-ding them. He's dressing them down. He is saying, you idiots, how did you lose a castle? Well, do you not know where the castle is?
I will say this.
Say it.
Two guys dressed like this in any other army would not even be fighting. They would be the guys cooking the food for the worst fighters. They do not look like leaders in any way, shape, or form. The Frey outfit seems to be a little not so magisterial.
No. Oh, my goodness gracious. This was painful. These buffoons, what can we do? We got rid of it. And Walder Frey's like, listen, for 300 years, we've been kissing the Tully's floppy fish banner. I'm sick of it. We've got 10 times as many men as he's got. And then we find out that even though Walder Frey is supposed to be the Lord of the Riverlands now, because in replacing the Tullys, it turns out many of the Tully bannermen, like we find out the Malisters and the Blackwoods, have said, screw the Freys, enough of this. And we get a mention of a group we haven't seen since season 3, the Brotherhood Without Banners, who are raiding the Frey supply lines.
The BWBs.
Oh my goodness. This is, we had a double R here in the chat room from Holly Huntpants. She says, the Riverlands remember.
Oh, man.
Love it. Love it. Are you guys glad to be seeing, are you glad to see good old Walder Frey again?
I actually did miss him just because, honestly, he's just so funny.
I know. He is. He's a good rat bastard. And he is telling his sons, enough, enough. Take it back. And he reminds him, he says, what about the knife that stabbed Talissa Stark in the belly when she was pregnant? What about the knife that slit Catelyn Stark's throat? What about the prisoner we still have? And I actually love this very meta line. He says, why don't you remind them who got married at the Red Wedding in the first place? Because a lot of people have forgotten about Edmure Tully. And so Edmure is brought up, and he has been in a dungeon, theoretically, since the Red Wedding back in season 3. He looks rough.
He does. And let me tell you, he's got a really, either a really bad wig or just bad hair.
And Walder Frey's trying to cheer him up. He's like, cheer up, Lord Edmure. You're going home to River Run. Ouch. This was brutal. This was painful. It is easy to forget about Edmure because, unlike in the books, he only appeared in the 3rd season. And then, sure enough, at the Red Wedding, he goes out early and is pretty much, we're told, we're not shown, he's put in a dungeon after his wedding night, which is
kind
of... Are
you happy to have this storyline back?
Well, spoiler alert, this is a storyline from the 4th book that they've been trying to get back into shape. They moved the characters around a bit and okay, are now getting back to it. So I think there is a chance that this could be a great highlight of the remainder of the season. So we know Jaime is headed to River Run. We know these Freys and Edmure Tully are headed to River Run.
Okay.
We know that the Riverlands are trying to stage a rebellion. And so I think it could be fun. Are you not excited? What do you think?
I'm less excited for some of these smaller stories. I will say I was super excited, again, when we go back to Samwell Tarly. I thought that scene
right,
was great with him and his parents.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that storyline...
Again.
The storyline is going to become important next season, this last season. I'm not sure when it will become important.
Well, we'll see. I think it could be really fun. And so now, Catfish, let's leave the Riverlands and let's head back to Essos and the city of Abravos, and let's get to what I feel they should have ended the episode with. Arya Stark no longer being no one. This was some great scenes, in my opinion. Now, let me say, I rated the episode only 7.5 because any episode that reminds me of King Joffrey, you know, having to fake his death, that's depressing. I teared up again. I was balled up in a puddle. I was so sad seeing
right,
the scene.
But I guess we're lucky. We both would have rated a little lower if they had intimated that Joffrey's portrayer had some sort of genital warts. So at least they avoided that. I can deal with his death, but to besmirch his name right, with a sexually transmitted disease is what really boiled my gums last week.
So we sure enough see the wedding to Margaery and the getup they have on the actress who's portraying Margaery with all the flowers, I think is hilarious. And sure enough, the one thing the play got right is the evil Uncle Imp. They got it, Catfish.
They did get it. Well, that's the story that went around, so why not?
Now, there's something I want to ask you. Arya, is uh-huh, Arya while she watches the wedding, or is she no one when she watches the wedding? Because she laughs a lot, like an evil Stark would, at King Joffrey's death.
Yeah, I think she is definitely still Arya because look, she doesn't need to be up front. She could be in the back again. In
right,
fact, she's already been to the play once as no one. She should be in the back even if it's her first time.
Right.
But she's been seen once. She's back again. I will say this. I do agree that the portrayal of Cersei here,
yeah,
this woman does a great job with her speech.
Yes.
She's clearly the most talented actress among this crew, even among Richard E. Grant.
This, oh, I thought you were going to say the Bravosi playbill was like, come for Lady Crane, leave for the fart jokes. Now, did you think, if she's Arya Stark and not no one, do you think she was affected and in any way felt sorry for Cersei during this scene?
I do actually think she did feel sorry for Cersei, and she shows that later on when she talks to him, because she's thought through how Cersei probably felt,
right.
which at least shows that she can put herself in different people's mindsets. That's probably part of her training, but you can put yourself in different mindsets but not be affected. And she's emotionally affected, but also really super pissed that the younger, worse actress is mouthing the words behind
her. That was hilarious, Catfish. That was hilarious with the young actress. She hasn't even, she's not hidden in the wings. She's just standing there mouthing the words.
Yeah, she's getting ready for her performance.
Yeah, she's getting ready to take over. This
she might be doing the night show.
She's doing the Sunday matinee is what when she
gets
it.
Well, they're doing the matinee now, but she thinks, I better prepare for the night show.
Now, Arya, she uses kind of the curtain call for her ability to sneak in and poison the wine. And why did Arya, you tell me, why did Arya not allow Lady Crane to die?
Because she felt sympathy for her, and also she just felt that it was an injustice. I think if she'd had to poison the younger actress her to be a bitch, she would have been okay with that.
Okay.
So she still has a sense of righteousness, which is what I assumed, mistakenly, that Jochen had at first. I felt like he was doing his deeds out of a righteous sense of duty for the right.
Right.
But here that's not the case. Basically, they'll do whatevs, whatever you get paid for.
Yeah, I know. It is. It's pretty terrible. So, did you think Lady Crane was going to die in this scene? Was it an effective scene? What'd you think?
When she left, I thought, yeah, she's going to do it. Did you think that she was going to do it?
I thought she was going to do it too. Or I thought there was a chance that maybe something would go wrong and somebody else would say, you know what, tonight give me some rum. You know, I thought something like that might happen.
That could happen. Also, you know, it's funny because I thought, if not for the fact that she's being hunted down and she's training to be a killer, I think Arya might be a little intrigued by the offer to join the circus, as it were.
Yeah. Join the circus like you wanted to when you were a kid. Did you like that Richard E. Grant, the character who played Tywin Lannister and Robert Baratheon, he was like, this crowd was crap.
Well, what I like about Richard E. Grant, and again, you have to assume this is not a big role, and he's of a well-known actor, but I would assume two things. One, that he just wanted to be on this show because it's a big show.
Uh-huh.
And two, they said, Richard E. Grant, does he usually do a subtle portrayal? I think he might be right for this.
Mondo Dory in the Periscope chat just said, now the faceless men are going to get really bad Yelp reviews from this from the younger actress who wanted the older actress dead. It's like, oh, come on.
Totally true. You give death a bad name.
Bad name. Man, this was a really nice bonding moment between Lady Crane and Arya. It's not that she's Arya Stark. It's just no one. It's almost like you're not supposed to have any feelings or any judgment. You just do what the many-faced god wants.
Right, but it's okay to sort of use your personality to get close to a person.
Right.
But she's already finished the job. She should just be gone. She says, excuse me, miss, I must take this flea-ridden blanket away for washing.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
I'm sorry. It's probably not a blanket. It must be someone's robe or their fake robe, fake king's robe. Sorry, madam.
It comes to a head. We assume Arya has left after she's had this bonding moment with
the
Lady
one other
Crane.
Thing that Arya's not good at is different. You need to have different disguises. Like on that show, The Americans, they have a bunch of different disguises. Basically, all Arya has is her oysters, clams, and mussels hair.
Cockles.
Right. Oysters. Oysters, clams, and cockles. This is me hair for that.
Why didn't Arya? It still doesn't make any sense. So the younger actress, note that she says that the audience loved you, Lady Crane. So the younger actress, if she did order this hit, is completely two-faced, Catfish.
Well, the other thing is, it turns out at this point that it actually might be Richard E. Grant that wants her dead.
Right.
Basically, everyone else is jealous because they suck and she doesn't.
Yeah, you're attacking her acting. You're attacking my writing. F you.
The guy's like, you know what?
Yeah.
I sit here
every day.
I have to squat down while some other guy's doing the fart noises. Where's my love?
Yeah, where is it? Where is it? And so there was a lot of hate here, a lot of anger.
Everybody's jealous. Jealousy.
And Arya just couldn't do it. She's too much of a Stark. She's not no one. Lady Crane has a couple of fakes like she's going to sip from the cup.
Yeah, I mean, Arya almost Benjamined it and didn't get there in time.
So Hodor held the door. Arya broke the cup. She saved Lady Crane. And then if that wasn't bad enough, she points the finger at the younger actress. Whoa.
You know what? Nobody likes a tattletale.
Nobody does like a tattletale. Arya even says, watch that one. She wants you dead. Oh, snap. And of course, the other no one, the one that we sometimes refer to as the waif, she is glad. She's been sick of this. She never trusted Arya Stark at all.
Let me just say this, though.
Yeah?
It seems to me that the waif had two jobs.
You had just two jobs.
You had just two jobs.
Let's hear it.
One is to watch Arya.
Right.
The other one is if Arya doesn't do the job, do the damn job.
Right. But the waif is a double T.
Double T.
Tattletale.
She is.
She goes and she is just so happy. There's supposed to be no one and have no emotions, but she's happy. And what do you think about Jaqen? Jaqen,
disappointed. She didn't like being number two. It felt like she wasn't getting as much love from Jaqen.
Right. Ugh. And Jaqen is gross as he's ripping off the face.
He's not ripping it off. He's saving it for posterity.
Well, you got to rip it off the skull, rip it off the body.
Yeah, but it's not like you're going to wipe the floor with it.
And you can tell Jaqen did like her. He's like, don't let her suffer. This, to me, is a sure sign of, oh, crap, this is trouble. This waif has, you know, she may be no one, but she's got some emotion, means she hates Arya, and she has an even smile as she goes.
She is a kind of person who loves her job. And
there's no way Arya can survive.
Arya has gotten, we forgot to mention, Arya picked up a little something on her way back from saving the lady, and
she
that is...
She picked up Needle, baby!
Needle.
Aren't you all glad that Needle is back? But Arya, she is in bad, bad shape. Remember what Jaqen said. He said one way or another, another face will join the wall in the Hall of Faces. Oh my goodness gracious.
Wow.
She's in deep trouble. Is it possible that Arya Stark dies this season, Catfish?
It is, and I think I saw it. We'll read the exact tweet. But someone suggested on Twitter, we'll give them the right accreditation later, that perhaps she gets killed and then her face is used for someone to imitate Arya and cause trouble in this world.
Oh my goodness gracious. That would be incredible if that happened. Read what somebody just put in on Periscope, Catfish.
Someone said, waif is going to get pinned by a needle.
Pinned by a needle. Oh my goodness gracious.
Now, even if that's so,
yeah,
and despite the fact that it appears that it's really just Jaqen and the waif here.
Right. A two-person team.
I would still assume that there are plenty of no ones out there that
Arya's
going to have to run away from.
Oh, yeah. It's not just escaping the waif. So say the waif does get needled. You know, who knows? Every single person you talk to could be trouble.
You know what they say about being a no-faced person?
What do they say?
Blood in, blood out. Just like the Crips.
Pause for laughter. And so, Catfish, we reached it. 7.5. It wasn't a bad episode in any way, I don't think.
No.
The scenes, maybe coming after last week's, and I know you felt one way, but last week's just blew me away. So it was always going to come down if it couldn't match that. And once again, it sets up things I'm impressed with. Hey, Benjen's back. Bran has got a mission now somehow to fight these WW White Walkers. We see Arya is, oh, snap, in a world of hurt. And once again, that's how I would have ended the episode, because that's when I was like, oh, crap.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Daenerys didn't really have too much movement in her storyline, but now she's riding the dragon. Haven't we been waiting for somebody to ride these dragons?
That whole time that scene was happening.
Yeah.
What I thought it would have been more entertaining was when they stopped, was if we'd have gone to a scene and the guys just in back, right? Because they're riding, and then they stop. And then like, have we stopped?
Is that it?
Is this a break? Is this lunch? Is this lunch?
What's going on here?
Are we waiting? That would have been, to me, a more fun scene than what we saw.
We have Brienne, Jamie, the Freys, Edmure, Blackfish, all headed towards Riverrun. I think that's interesting. We didn't go to the north at all. We didn't go to Marine at all this... sorry, when I mean the north, I mean Winterfell or the Wall at all this episode. We didn't go to Marine. I certainly don't mind going to Marine. Who would think that with big star Peter Dinklage as evil Uncle Imp, that he would be such a non-factor this year that it's felt like he's been?
Yeah, no, I agree. Yes, not just him, but as I said, Cersei's been sort of a non-factor.
Right, in some ways.
You know, well, I think we've seen almost as many scenes with Double S.
Double S?
Stupid Samwell.
Sam's been in 2 episodes, the third one and this one. He has not been in more scenes.
It just feels like, as far as the importance level, okay. Like, I mean, come on.
Right, yeah, it's just you wonder where everything's going to go in some storylines. And so
this was part of my problems with the books, which I've said over and over again.
You have.
Which is that we keep adding more characters and spend time with more characters rather than honing in on the ones we know. And so for when you get to a show like this, there's so many people that we love to watch that we miss out on. I miss... not just Tyrion's machinations, but Cersei's and Varys. And you're just sort of stuck doing not much.
And you miss Dorne? It hasn't been seen since season episode one.
Because I missed the triple S's.
Triple S's.
Sexy sand snakes.
Yeah, we also didn't get the Iron Islands this week. There is just so much.
Oh, that's too bad.
There's just so much to service in this season. But... even though it wasn't the greatest episode, I thought it was a good episode. I have faith on where some of the storylines are going. That's the episode. We still have 2 things to do.
We do. What are those 2 things we have to do?
We've got to review the wonderful iTunes and Stitcher reviews that our double L's.
Double L's.
Our loyal listeners have given us. And we have to give our Joffreys of the Week. I've heard you say that you have a great Joffrey of the Week.
Oh, man, no, don't oversell it. I just didn't
want you to said that
mine.
Earlier on the
podcast.
I just
wanted to steal mine.
All right, so let's go to our iTunes and Stitcher reviews. Let's go to iTunes first because it is a painful one. We don't say you have to give us 5-star reviews. We don't say you have to give us positive reviews. We just say, hey, give us a written iTunes review. We're so close to 100. I'm very excited. But... sometimes they
all we need is 9 more like this and we'll be completely out of business.
So let's go ahead. And sure enough, in the USA iTunes store, we had a 1-star review. The title of the review was Pathetic, and it's from Shannon 54321. So 54321, Shannon 54321. And she writes, even in the Joffrey of Podcasts, attempt of humor can't save the podcast. It would be okay if they had superior book knowledge, which they don't, or if were funnier than their lack of book or show knowledge was. Waste of a podcast. Dragon Brag is better than this pod. Ouch. We got ripped a new one, and as someone, I don't want to Dragon Brag myself, but I know these shows and I know these books pretty darn well. And when they say our knowledge isn't coming through, I want to say, hey, maybe that's because I like to not bring in book knowledge. I like to not have that kind of taint or color our versions of the show. Only our Joffrey chapters that we read on off-season podcasts are okay. So maybe that's making it seem like we don't know much. And then sometimes, to be honest, I think you guys would love people like Mork. Mork, who when he mispronounces Astapor and Young Kai and Marine, I let him mispronounce it, and it's not to show ignorance, but just to show how difficult it is for a show this complex to filter through to a non-book reader like Mork. And I don't think that's bad. We are the only podcast that is hosted by 2 book readers, and one of the book readers can't remember the books.
That's absolutely true. And not only that, I stopped reading the books because they frustrated me so much.
But I was going to say, Catfish, you did read the 4th book, you said.
Yeah.
And what was great is in last week's episode about the Drowned God, you were like, oh, wow, that's so neat. Hey, they drowned the person in the Drowned God ceremony.
I started the 4th book.
Oh, you didn't finish
it? I did not finish the 4th book.
Oh, you had always said you had read the 4th book. So I thought you knew that part
too. But anyway, yes. The other thing is, you know what? Whatever. You just can't please everybody all the time. We're here for our double L's.
Double L's?
Yeah, loyal listeners.
Oh.
And you know what?
What?
There's some things out there that are great and people love and I hate. You know, one thing that I hate?
Yeah, let's hear it.
I hate this review that we got.
Hey, okay. Yeah, there's some people out there who love this negative review we got.
Yeah.
But we did get some positive reviews from Stitcher. These people are also entered in the contest. Catfish, why don't you read those?
All right, I will. We got a 5-star review from King Salmons.
Thank you so much.
He said, like King Joffrey on the Iron Throne. Perfect.
Ooh, thank you.
This is the most entertaining podcast I've listened to ever.
Wow.
I'm a book reader who just started keeping current this season. This is new territory for me.
Wow.
Having no new content for a week at a time, and I'm glad to have these guys to get me from Sunday to Sunday.
Heck yeah.
These guys are genuinely funny while making good points and revealing more about each episode. Listen to one recap episode, and I guarantee you, you'll be hooked.
I guarantee it.
I guarantee there's someone who is not hooked.
Right.
All right. The other review we got was from Dadzy, our old friend Dadzy. He gave 5 stars.
We love Dadzy.
He says, this cast is like the tender arms of an SH.
SH?
Yeah, it's Sansa.
Oh, whoops.
Hater.
Sansa
hater? I don't know. With a good dose of tongue-in-cheeky nattering, these boys deliver an informative and entertaining cast that props up even the worst showrunner disasters up to a palpable level. Be sure to check out their other stellar efforts, such as The Strain's Greatest Last podcast, Got Your Milk. If you enjoy a look back or a rewatch, their Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell podcast, Lost Hope, is an STPI.
STPI?
Sure to please. Oh, sorry. It's STP exclamation point. It's, look on there. Look there. I'm reading these cold.
Really? You are? Boy, who could have figured that out?
I am reading it cold.
Shame. All right, so final thing we do every week is we do our Joffreys of the Week. Catfish, let's hear it. A Joffrey of the Week could be a person, a place, an idea on the show or outside in the real world. So let's hear it.
My Joffrey of the Week is what I like to call Double W.
Double W?
Yes. William Weld.
Who?
William Weld is a former governor who ran a few years ago, also for governor, as a libertarian and promised that he would not back out to run as a libertarian, and then did end up backing out to run as a libertarian. And then in the election we're in now,
okay,
he supported John Kasich. And now he's running for the vice presidential ticket for the Libertarian Party. So for a man who has managed to stab people in the back and then rise again, William Weld is my Joffrey of the Week.
Man, that is a good Joffrey, Catfish.
Thank you.
It was hard to see where that was going. Kind of like in real life, I'm sure it's kind of hard to see where this bozo's go. I mean, this true Joffrey is going. So thank you very much. Now, Catfish,
yes.
Every week, I like to point out people on the show who are like Joffrey.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I know that.
And there is one person on this show,
okay,
who is strong on defense.
Got it. Strong on defense.
Was Joffrey strong on defense, Catfish?
Oh, yeah. He defended himself very well.
Right. At the Battle of King's Landing against evil Uncle Stannis' army. Who defended themselves the best in this episode? Can you guess? Because there were a lot of defenders, but who defended himself the best?
There were a lot of people who defended themselves. Gosh, I'm going to say, no, I can't even guess it. You tell me who it is. I'm going to guess wrong no matter what.
That is true. You would. My Joffrey of the Week, Randall Tarley.
Randall Tarley.
Some people are soft on illegal immigrants.
Uh-huh.
But Randall Tarley found out there was a wildling woman at his dinner table.
He's all, you know what, that's not the only thing he's soft on.
What?
He's also soft on extra helpings.
Right. Just like Joffrey.
Yeah.
Take all. Joffrey wants the Seven Kingdoms in shape. Randall Tarley wants his son in shape.
Perfect.
Love it. And so somebody just tweeted out, hashtag make Westeros eat again.
Well, like we do, as I said, we do that on every podcast. And what we're also doing now is we have a little feedback podcast that you put out a little bit later in the week.
Right.
And so we're looking forward to that.
It comes out every Friday morning. Everybody check your podcatcher on Friday for our feedback show.
But before you do that, and also to give us some wonderful feedback, make sure to write something on Stitcher, to post something to our Facebook page, or tweet at myself or Bubba. Always use the hashtag Joffrey Podcast. And when you tweet, remember you can tweet at me, Catfish, at CJGman67.
Or you can tweet at me, Bubba, at Fit and Trim. That's FitTentrim, at Fit and Trim on Twitter.
Okay, until the wrap-up show on Friday, the feedback show, catch us on
the Joffrey of Podcasts.